Hey girls, it's another morning here in my kitchen, and I told you every day I'm going to do this podcast because I have nothing else to do. The kids are in school, and I'm just going to talk every day into my little headset, and hopefully somebody out there will listen to me. I know that Erin is listening to me because Erin
Good morning.
joins me. Hi, Erin.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. You know, the kids, I just took them to the bus stop. I just made my pot of coffee. I just made all the beds and put in a load of laundry. And, so this is it. This is my life. I'm a little bit lonely, a little bored. What am I going to do with myself? I said to my husband last night, I said, Bill, what am I going to do with myself? What should I do? I need a new project. He's like, Darla, school was in session for one day.
I think you have plenty on your to-do list to keep you busy.
I know I do, but I need more. I always have to have more, more, more. And what your children just went to preschool. This is their first year in preschool?
They went to preschool. They're going three days a week, so Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So they're home with me today. But they went yesterday, and they loved it, and they had a great time. And the teacher said they did really well. So yeah, it was a good day for us.
Now, you have twins, and what kind of pressure do you feel under where you live to make sure that they are up to par for kindergarten? Because I'm going to tell you this, Erin. Last night I was up till 1 in the morning reading this Newsweek issue, September 11th issue, and I suggest anyone with a toddler, a first grader, or a kindergartner reads this. It's talking about the pressure that our society is putting on these kids now to read in kindergarten, to be so smart, to be so ahead of the curve. And the new trend, Erin, is that people are holding their kids back an extra year, so their kids are older, and so they're like quicker, smarter, and ahead of the group. I think that's
Right. Well,
so
that's what I've
stupid.
always heard with boys, that it's better to keep boys back a year because they tend to be a little later developmentally than girls anyway. So I've always been told to, hold boys back, but
I don't know. I don't
so.
believe in it. Connor's birthday is August, and he went to kindergarten in September, as soon as he turned 5. And Hannah's birthday's in August, and she went to school in September. They're both doing fine. Connor's the smartest kid in his grade. I mean, these kids are like little sponges. I mean, what is with all the parents in America? Are we losing our minds that we're so obsessed with our kids being the best in kindergarten? Grow up!
That's tough. You kind of feel like I tend to lean toward, letting my kids be kids, enjoying the summer, not making them learn, flashcards over the summer and things like that. And but yeah, then do you want your kid to always be behind everybody else? I mean, it's
I
hard to
think
decide what to do.
it's more embarrassing, and I think as a parent, it looks even worse that your kid isn't smart enough to start school when he was supposed to. I mean, if you look at it like that, then oh yeah, well, I know someone who says, "Oh, well, my kid's the smartest one in the class." Well, he's a year older than everyone else. Big deal. And are we this insecure? You know what? It's all the mothers. I mean, are we this insecure that now we have to live through our child's academic record in the first grade?
Apparently. Oh my.
So I'm reading this thing. I was getting so pissed off last night to the point where I feel like pulling my kids out of the public school system and letting them stay home and just homeschooling them. So all of our homeschooling moms on the website, I'm starting to think, Erin, that they're smarter.
Well, I read a book called The Unschooled Mind, and it talked about how children's minds aren't actually being utilized in the correct way in the public school system. The public schools aren't geared toward, how kids actually think. And after reading that book, it is enough to make you think, I'm going to do my own thing, and I'm going to teach my kids at home, but that's not me. I couldn't do it.
Well, I don't have the patience, but let me just tell you this. This article, Too Much Too Soon, if you read this whole thing, and I want everyone to read it, it gets into what the children are learning. Now, what is in the school systems now is this no kid left behind routine, where they're just obsessed with the kids learning how to read, which you would think is a good thing. But at the end of the year, they have these standardized federal tests. So the whole year they spend gearing for this test, and they don't learn anything else. So what they're saying is all the good, historical moments and scientific moments and all this other fun learning is going out the window. We're not even doing any of this anymore because it's all about this stupid ELA, this test at the end of the year. So you have 1 year, your kids have 4, to think about what you're going to do. I screwed up. My kids are, they're in the public school system. They're entrenched with their friends. I'm stuck. I can't get out of it now. But
But I
if
don't think
I
you're screwed up. It sounds like your kids are doing great, so.
They're doing great, but if I had to do it all over again, I think I would have did things a little bit differently. Maybe try to find some kind of, I don't know, creative outlet for them to go into. I know that there are these other schools, you know, that you could put them in that aren't, you know, private schools.
Right, right.
Whatever. So I'm ranting today because I'm pissed off.
At the Newsweek article.
I'm mad over this. I'm mad that, you know, that the children are being pushed so hard. I want the kids to be able to run around, have fun, just like what you said.
Yeah, be kids, yeah.
And be kids. And, you know, I also think some of the skills, like, you know, survival skills are very important. Learning mm-hmm. how to put an engine together, learning how to work the grounds, farming, all of these great skills that, you know, I think that we're not even teaching them to our kids anymore.
Right. Well, we all know people that have the book smarts, but they can't, you know, fix their tire to save their life, or they can't, you know, cook dinner to save their life, but they're intelligent people.
Yeah, they're smart, but
I'd rather my kids have some life skills too.
Yeah. So anyway, what else is going on? Sergio is your husband. I just spoke to him. He sounds really cute. And looking at the website,
he is pretty cute.
See, there's a picture up here with him. He's cute.
He's a pretty cute guy.
And
I like him.
He's a big guy. He's tall. How tall is he?
Well, he's not really that tall. He's only like 5'9", but he's
real
stocky.
Well, then you must be like 3 foot high.
I'm only 5'1". I'm short. I'm so short. So we have the little midget family.
Yeah, we Bill and I went to a party a few weeks ago, and there was a couple there, and the husband was like 6'4", and the wife was like 4'10". And I was trying to figure out, how do they have sex? She has to always be on top. Or they have to do it from behind. Whatever. There's no way they could, like, kiss or have sex face-to-face or missionary. It's impossible. And I can't even figure out how they became attracted. Like, there's no way they could dance together, a slow dance.
I always dated tall guys. Always. And then Sergio is the shortest guy I ever dated, and I ended up marrying him. So, yeah, it's funny how it all ends up. But
he's not short. That's, I think the average height is 5'10", right, for a guy?
Yeah, well, he's 5'9", so yeah. But he's a stocky guy. He's very muscular and built, and he's in the Navy, so he has to work out all the time. And
now, is there a height requirement to get into the Navy? Like, if you're a guy and you're 4'2", can you go in the Navy, you think?
You know, I don't think there's a height requirement, but I know there's certain programs you can't go into if you're that short.
Or
if you're too tall.
But wait, I am for body segregation. In all
body
levels.
Segregation.
Yes, in all levels. Let me explain. Number one, if I'm going to be burning in a fire, I want a big, hunky, 6'2", muscular guy to pull me out of the fire. Not some 4'2" girl. Let's just say it right now. That's number one. Number two, when I'm on an airplane in my skinny little seat, I do not want someone who's 500 pounds squished next to me where their thigh is seeping into my seat.
Oh, my.
So
I was on a plane one time trying to feed actually one of the boys with a fat person next to me. It was very difficult.
You know, I think that if if you're bigger than your seat, if you're wider than the seat, you have to buy two seats. Is that unreasonable?
There's a lot of people that feel that way, right, yeah.
Or the people who are heavy need to get together. Listen, I'm the queen of all marketing. And you know that I am always telling other people what to do. So here's a great suggestion. For the people who are overweight, they should band together and kind of put together their own little organization. Like AARP is so powerful.
Yeah.
Put their own little organization together, like Fat People of America, and demand. They should be demanding the airlines provide wider seats. These seats are so tiny. It's ridiculous. I could barely fit my
And they're getting smaller, I think, too. I think they're getting smaller.
But they're getting smaller so they can fit more people in. Now, I think that the people should get together and complain against the airlines and demand wider seats. I went, when we were in Busch Gardens, I had to go to the bathroom one day. The bathroom stall, now I squat in public places. Are you a squatter, Erin?
I do. You know, yeah, I do. I don't want to sit on the seat that somebody else has.
Yeah, I spread my legs, I aim, and I squat. So I could barely squat, okay, without hitting my head on the door. That's how tiny. And how about an airplane bathroom?
That's impossible.
Right. I'm a size 4. I'm 5'2", and I can barely squat on that airplane toilet bowl without my face being in the aisle. So how is a heavy, fat person going to be able to go to the bathroom in there? There's no way.
I don't know.
No, there's no way they can go in there. They cannot fit.
Right.
So they should be going and – they should be boycotting the airlines. They should be complaining. And for all of our moms, we have a lot of moms who are overweight who need to go on diets. And for all of our moms, I love them. They know they need to go on diets. But you should be complaining. You should be demanding to be able to pee in peace.
Pee in peace. Hey, that could be a great billboard.
You know, it's not fair. It's just, it's terrible. So you see, today I'm all riled up. I need to fight a cause or something.
Well, I listened to the last podcast late last night with you and Dana, and you all were talking about taking over the world or something.
We were? I don't remember. But
you've been talking about the anniversary of the book coming up and women banding together to, you know, for different causes. So
you can add that
to the list.
Right. Stay-at-home moms, we have such a large group. There are 6 million full-time stay-at-home moms in this country who are registered, who say that they are. A lot of women are in the closet still and don't want to admit that they're stay-at-home moms. And there are a lot of women who are working who are trying to transition to being home. But if we all came together and we started our own big group, which is what I'm trying to do, you know, we would be the number one political voice in this country. And I only care.
That would be amazing.
It would be amazing. And I don't really care about politics, but I become political when it comes to issues that I think affect moms. Like, I think that there should be a tax credit for stay-at-home moms.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
If you, listen, right now, a Head Start program gets tax money. They get a tax credit for those programs. So why shouldn't a woman who gives up her job to stay home, to raise her family, to raise the future, which is the most important thing for this country, the future, right, to run it?
Right.
Why shouldn't we get a tax incentive, a credit?
Well, that would be amazing, because that's one of the main concerns women have about deciding to stay home is the income, the part that they have been contributing to the family, and then will no longer be there. So that would actually help out quite a bit with the financial situation of families who decide for the moms to stay home.
Right. And when you look at the numbers, what happens is most women, after they pay for child care and they pay for commuting expenses and all these other expenses, at the end of, you know, the week, they don't have that much money left over. So if we could give stay-at-home moms a few extra $1,000 each year, right?
Right.
For each child, this would be a great help. There are 2 states who have this in effect, and I don't know what states
they
are. Yeah, there's one of our moms.
I'm going to have to go look it up.
Well, one of our moms, Christina, who lives, I believe, in California, Southern California, sent me an email telling me that there are 2 states that have this. I have to look it up what it is, but I asked her to work on this and to look into it, because if we could start maybe a petition or something. Maybe we could.
Wow, that's amazing.
Maybe we could put together a bus. Remember the Million Man March?
Yeah.
We could have the Million Mom March on Washington.
That would be so great. Oh, my gosh, that would be hilarious.
I love that Million Mom March.
Yeah, why not?
We could go with our spatulas and walk up
on
Capitol Hill.
Wouldn't that be our aprons and our spatulas and take over Washington. Gosh, wouldn't that be a great picture?
That would be so exciting. I love this.
Sign me up.
I'm going to run for, you know, some kind of office, and this is what my platform is going to be. It's tax credits for stay-at-home moms.
Right.
Okay? Organic meat, chicken, and dairy, period.
Right.
Everybody has to succumb to that. And number 3, husbands have to give their wives a big O once a month at least.
You think they can legislate that?
I think so. Why not?
I don't know. Oh, I don't want to be in the enforcement department of that law.
Well, I'm going to tell you this.
Vicky might be in the enforcement part of that law.
Well, you know, I never thought that there are so many women who were not being satisfied in bed from their husbands until I started reading on the website and getting emails from women around the country. And I just want to say, moms, you deserve great sex. And I think that if you can get back in the sack and reignite those sparks, you're going to be a lot happier, don't you think, Erin?
Definitely. Yep, goes a long way for stress relief.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that tomorrow, because it's a very serious issue. I have a very close girlfriend who confided in me that she's having some problems in the bedroom, and it's very interesting. And we'll talk about that tomorrow. I'm trying to keep the podcast, Erin, to 15 minutes every day, because I think that's a reasonable amount of time for moms to listen. And
yeah, I think that's a great.
Yeah, and then we won't take up too much of our bandwidth. So we got to go, Erin. I will chat with you tomorrow. Go have fun with Sergio and the kids.
Okay, thank you so much, Darla.
Okay, take care, honey.
Uh-huh, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.